let the earth of my body be mixed with the earth you walk on, and let the fire of my body be the brightness shining in your eyes. Oh, let me be sky and moving through me, black cloud like one. Oh, let me be sky moving through me, that dark, dark.
are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com and mysticpete on social media. In today's show, I feature Jai Utal. At the very beginning of this episode, I played Jai's piece called Let Me Be Sky. I'll play my interview with him in a minute, very insightful. After the interview, his piece called Psalm, and then Primordial Swamp Beat. Stay tuned. Mystic Pete Chronicles! It is February 23rd. 2024, Mystic Pete here with Jai Utal, and you have a really neat concert on March 9th at the Art of Living Center. Hi, Jai.
Hey, Mystic Pete. How are you?
So glad to talk to you. You're an important person in the community I know about, but for people who haven't heard your music yet, why don't you tell us about your background?
Oh, I'd love to. But first, I want to say thank you so much for having me on your show. It means a lot. So my background, you know, it's funny. Somebody once asked me just recently to tell my background in a nutshell. And when you're in your 70s, it's hard to put everything in a nutshell, but I will. I was born in New York and I grew up in New York City. And my first, you know, it might sound strange, but my first musical love, which continues to be a great musical love of mine, is old-timey banjo. And so I still play banjo, but this was like what really first turned me on. And then I got into psychedelic music, Jimi Hendrix and all that. And then one day I heard Indian music. I heard it, I don't remember where I heard it, but then I started going to all the record stores. This is in the, you know, 60s, all the record stores in Manhattan, and finding every album of Indian music, classical or folk music that I could find, and getting really, really turned on by it. So then I went to college. I left New York and I went to college in Oregon. And the night before my classes, Ali Akbar Khan performed. And Ali Akbar Khan was one of the great masters of Indian classical music. He played a string instrument called the sarod. Anyway, this concert was just so mind-blowing to me that I spent, I guess, 3 months in college. I failed music, I failed religion, and I dropped out, and I came down to the Bay Area and started studying Indian music, Indian classical music with Ali Akbar Khan, first as an instrumentalist, and then later I started singing. He actually, you know, I was very shy about singing, but he insisted that everyone who studied with him, whether they were learning sitar, sarod, guitar, violin, whatever, tabla, we all had to study singing, because he said all music came from the voice. So anyway, I started learning the ragas and practicing with my voice. And then I went to India, and, you know, that first trip to India was so mind-blowing because, well, first of all, I heard the music, you know, in its birthplace. And then I started also hearing chanting and devotional singing and mantra chanting and kirtan all over the place. And it was so beautiful. And I also met my guru, Neem Karoli Baba, who people call him Maharaji, who, you know, I can't even begin to say how important and amazing and influential he is and was and is in my life. And he encouraged me and many of the people around him to sing kirtan, to sing mantras, to sing what they call the holy names. And well, I came back, and you know, over the years, I was still quite shy of singing, but people gradually were asking me to, you know, do workshops to tell them about kirtan, to lead kirtan. And very reluctantly, I started doing that. And at the same time, you know, I'm skipping ahead some decades. At the same time, I created my band called the Pagan Love Orchestra, which was this wild 11, 12, 13-piece band that was a mixture of jazz, reggae, rock, and Indian music. And we started making albums, and you know, every album, although the music was constantly developing, this aspect of devotional singing and mantra singing was, you know, like kind of the stream that ran through all the albums. The Pagan Love Orchestra, well, the band broke up because of, you know, finances. We couldn't find gigs for a 13-piece band. When that happened, I began to get more invitations to lead kirtan, and I started doing that. And, you know, lo and behold, it became kind of the center of not only my professional life, well, I mean, what had been the center of my internal spiritual life, but it became also the center of my professional life. And that's kind of continued over the years. And I've put out so many CDs and albums that I, you know, each one I felt like was a whole new step for me musically. And yet still lyrically, 85% has been mantra singing, and that this devotional singing, the singing, you know, filled with longing for the spirit, for the spiritual connection, I guess you could say. And musically, you know, I got one album's completely reggae, one's bossa nova. You know, I keep evolving with music. I love music so much, and I love how you can never stop learning with music, and how music is the perfect setting for this devotional practice. I don't know. Is that a nutshell?
You go in a lot of directions, and you've come through a lot of different genres, but it seems like it's circulating around kirtan. So can you explain that a little bit more? I mean, somebody who's been involved in a kirtan experience understands the ecstasy of it. What is this art form?
Kirtan is the practice, it's a meditative practice of singing mantras. Mantras are Sanskrit syllables or Sanskrit combinations of syllables and words that evolved from ancient times as a way to liberate the mind and open the heart and kind of find the seat of the soul and express it through sound. Kirtan is usually done in a group, and it's not, you know, it can be solitary, but usually it's done in a group, and it can range from very meditative, very slow, deep introspective singing to wild dancing, drumming, you know, high voltage singing as well. But it repeats these mantras, these words over and over and over again, which somehow or another, very easily makes the mind kind of take a back seat, the intellect, I should say, take a back seat and let the heart be the driver. And, you know, I've had so many beautiful experiences with singing kirtan with groups, because it also really, really strengthens and creates community, because people were singing together and we're going through such deep, deep emotions and feelings together. Kirtan is praise, is invocation, it's calling for the divine spirit through the medium of mantras and music.
Good explanation. Our community, I think one of the important foundations of it is this experience of ecstasy, this trance-like state which you find in a lot of, well, more tribal communities, sometimes other religions. But I think a lot of religion in America has kind of become theological, very mind-based, very belief-based. And people have left the churches because they want something different, something more profound, something that touches their heart. And I think our community, well, I don't know, I'm not sure what we call ourselves anymore, New Age or whatever, but we do bring that. We do bring people back to that internal state, that ecstasy, that losing oneself. There needs to be no belief, no doctrine at all. Just enter into that profound ecstasy and there you are. You get it. You touch Godhead. So I think that is something we've brought and something you specifically have brought. And it really doesn't matter what you believe. If you taste of that nectar, it's obvious the power of it.
Yeah, I love what you said. A couple of things that you said, you know, first of all, I totally agree. It's not a belief system. It's an experiential, practice. Well, I was once doing I lead these kirtan camps for the last 22 or 23 years, usually twice a year, where we get together and I share what I know, what I've experienced about kirtan, and we do a lot of kirtan. And one time, a woman, like we were in Guatemala at Lake Atitlan. It was this beautiful place. And a woman raised her hand and said, Jai, this is kind of strange for me because I'm an atheist. And here we are singing to elephant gods, monkey gods, forearm, blue skin goddesses, or whatnot, you know. And I thought for a second, you know, of course, my first thought, being a smart aleck, was, well, why are you here? But then, you know, I didn't say that. And I thought about it a little while. I said, well, tell me aside from what your mind is telling you, what are you experiencing? And she said, well, one thing is, you know, I don't usually connect with people. It takes me a long time to connect with people. And I find that over the last 3 days, I've been just connecting with the people here and having deep, deep conversations and like immediate friendships. And that's like never happens. And then she said, I'm a city girl and I don't like nature, but I've been walking on these trails and I see every leaf and every flower and I see the sun glistening in the lake and nature is completely blowing my mind. And she said, I never dream, but since I've been here, I've been having these most vivid, amazing dreams. Anyway, she went on, and I said, you know what? You're a poster girl for kirtan. And it just shows that, you know, we all have belief systems, and belief systems are kind of necessary in our life, but they're not the most important thing, because they're just little constructs of our mind, and they change, and that's, you know, it helps us, go to the other side of the city. But really, we want our lives to be led by our heart and by our experiences. And what you also mentioned was tribal cultures. You know, kirtan, I say that all indigenous earth-oriented cultures of the world have some form of repetitive call-and-response singing and drumming and dancing. And kirtan is the way it evolved in ancient India, but it resonates with so many other kinds of spiritual music ritual that I've heard from many, many countries.
Well, people, I think, have been leaving more doctrinaire religions and organizations and flocking to, well, even charismatic Christianity or Judaism or Islam or Hinduism, like the charismatic stuff that gets everybody all invigorated and having feelings. But this is something that our community does in kind of a very nice, gentle, loving way with not a lot of doctrine. So I think it's very appealing, the yoga practitioner and so forth. And you do find this in yoga classes. But you're a musician. You're not just doing a religious chant or ritual. You're turning it into music. So tell me about the concert on March 9th, 2024 at the Art of Living Center. You are doing this fusion of East and West and just regular legit music and kirtan. Explain how this all puts together.
You know, for years and years and years, I've been exploring how to bring Indian music, both classical and folk music, and you know, but particularly devotional music. How to bring that together with Western music, with you know, music I grew up with, and kind of soul music and some jazz and reggae. You know, I've like since the early 70s, I've been a reggae fanatic. So you know, there's been many evolutions and many phases of this, and I hope and trust that there will continue to be many phases and evolutions. And one, actually, you know, I failed to say that I've been married to my soulmate for 23 years, and she's Brazilian, so she has turned me on to so much beautiful Brazilian music, and I've been studying that with a Brazilian guitarist for a bunch of years now. Anyway, so the band that I have for our concert in Los Angeles kind of brings all that together. We have, in some senses, it's a traditional rock band format. We have bass, drums, electric guitar, and keyboards, and then me on harmonium, which is a little pump organ, as well as acoustic guitar, and another woman on harmonium, this Indian pump organ and singing. And the songs, the compositions, they're from a bunch of my albums, and most of them, but not all of them, will be call and response kirtans, but with really deep Western grooves. The bass player, Mark Gorman, comes completely out of the reggae tradition. The drummer, Dave Allen, well, you know, he plays everything, but very, very knowledgeable in world music. And the guitarist, electric guitarist, Steve Postel, he's so well known. He was touring with David Crosby. He's such a great, great electric guitarist. The keyboardist, well, he's, in some ways, he's the most special person in the band because he is my 18-year-old son. And my son is studying music in Los Angeles at Musicians Institute. And, well, he's my buddy, you know, he's my best buddy, and I love him so much. But on top of that, he's a brilliant, fantastic musician. So that's a delight. And then the woman who will be playing the harmonium and singing, her name is Brianna Prajna Vieira, and she sings with me. We've been singing together nonstop pretty much for 15 years. She's a fabulous vocalist and very knowledgeable musician. So some of the pieces will be, a lot of it is reggae based in terms of the groove, but it's not strictly reggae, you know. It's hard to describe, and some has some samba in it, some bossa nova, and some is very traditional Indian sounding. Again, I'd say like 85% will be in the mantras and Sanskrit and Hindi, Bengali words. And then I'll do some songs from some of my albums that are in English words, that are kind of inspired by the medieval Indian songwriters, devotional songwriters, as well as, I think I'm going to do one song that I composed based on one of the Psalms of the Old Testament. On my new album, I have two songs that are based on Psalms. And, you know, it's not like, well, I say based on because it's not the full Psalm being sung in its traditional sense, but certain lines being taken and kind of the themes being expressed, and those are deep. And plus, you know, the one of them is from the 91st Psalm, which is attributed to Moses, and that is ancient. You know, that is a long time ago these words were sung, and they still resonate completely right now, as do the words on the rest of the album. The album's called Dust and Tears, which I put out several months ago, and I love it so much. And it is an exploration of taking these timeless devotional songs and bringing them into the present with, of course, new music, but also lyrically finding how they express who we are as human beings right now in 2024 versus, you know, what people were like in the 15th century. Because I don't think we're all that different. Then a lot of the songs will come also from a previous album called Roots Rock Rama, which is all kirtan, is all call and response singing, but very, very much in reggae and bossa nova and samba musical settings. It's going to be a gas. The Art of Living Dome is a gorgeous, gorgeous historic building. And I'm hoping a lot of people come and sing with me and dance. And, you know, I'll tell you, Mystic Pete, we live, you know, my family and I, we are mystics, right? And we hope with each day to touch the realms of spirit. But we're also very, very connected to the world and to what's happening today. You know, I read the paper, I need to know what's going on, and often it's quite heartbreaking. And so these practices are not necessarily for us to get away from the earth reality of what's going on, but for us to find spirit and find energy and find, you know, compassion that we can exist in this world and share love and share, well, whatever, you know. To some, they're going out on the streets as activists. For some, it's giving food to a neighbor, whatever. But to share and to share and to share and to you know, do our bit to help make the world a better place. And I think these ecstatic experiences, these gatherings, you know, whether it's meditation or whatever, but, you know, these sacred gatherings give us strength and resonance to share with others.
Well, certainly through the arts, through music, through dance. Well, this has been historically a way we touch the transcendental. And you certainly know how to weave that enchantment in your live concerts. But your last question, your last statement leads me to kind of an edgy question I should put to you before we wrap up the interview. When we think of, see, I'm not even sure what we call our community, whether it's New Age or wellness, maybe you can define it, but
what I can't define it.
Yeah. You're certainly a figurehead for our community. When you talk about New Age music, well, Jayutal is at the top of the list. So I just have to put this to you to see about your thoughts and ideas. There's been a couple of shadows from our community. And so going way back, so I came up through this community, Whole Life Festivals and mediumship and channeling and crystals, you know, in the 70s and 80s, this is what I was doing. So this is my religion in a sense. But there's always been a component of it that gets culty, that gets absurdist, that gets ridiculous. And then performative, like putting on the clothes of other cultures. You know, we want to pretend we're Native Americans, or we want to pretend we're Japanese and Zen Buddhist or Hindu and from East India. So like this kind of, as I say, performative spirituality and some would say appropriation of other cultures. So, you know, just to be clear, much of civilization happens because of interaction and mixing, and you try this food and that way of moving. And so that's obviously a very healthy thing that develops culture. But then at some point it becomes obnoxious, or people feel exploited, or they feel like the special things from their practices get, as I say, appropriated. So that's one shadow, and you could talk about that. Anyway, I thought we should just address this in some way. For both for people in our community who are concerned about it, or people who are outside our community who start to look at us like fools, like nincompoops. Like, help me make sense of this.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Hard question.
Yeah, but it's many questions in one, and they're all really great points and deep subjects. Let's see where to start. Yeah. This community of which you and I are a part, which is a very, you know, loose kind of community, it includes many different kinds of people and many different worldviews, but I guess you could say it centers on a spiritual, shall we say, intention. Yeah, the community has shadows, as do all humans. And every sphere of society has its shadows and its light, its shade and its light. And for myself, I feel, you know, I've been very much attacked at times for cultural appropriation, and to the point where I've even been told that my ancestors raped the ancestors of the Indians, in India. And of course, my ancestors were in shtetls in Eastern Europe, so that they were being raped. But nonetheless, I feel like what it comes down to is for each person to honestly, or I will just talk about myself, to deeply and honestly be as authentic and as respectful and as caring and loving as I can be. Now, I'll start with respectful. You know, I have been studying the tradition of Indian music, both classical and folk music, the different bowel music. It's another side of Indian music. But, the spiritual devotional side of Indian music since 1969. So my relationship with this practice, both the spiritual practice of mantra singing and chanting, as well as the deep, deep, deep art of Indian music, you know, it's not a casual relationship. It's not a dilettantish relationship. I studied on and off for 40 years with Ali Akbar Khan, the acclaimed master of Indian classical music. I don't claim to be an expert at all. I'm not. But I do say that my relationship with this is not superficial. And the whole thing also about, you know, the performative side. It's true that once you get on a stage, you know, this music itself is a deep spiritual, ritualistic spiritual practice. Once you're on the stage, and it's a career, you know, those things can get very mixed up. And the external worldly side of it can, I'll say dilute, but you could also use the word pollute, the spiritual side. And again, I can only speak for myself. I've tried very, very hard and sometimes failed, but my intention has been really strong from the get-go that this deep, honest, authentic spiritual intention is the captain of the ship. You know, to say that I never care about ticket sales or to say that I never care about what I look like on stage, that would be dishonest because, of course, those things come into my mind. But that's not where I'm at. You know what I mean? Now, that's not really the case for everyone who's sharing kirtan and sharing devotional music and sharing yoga. Of course, it's not. And while every time I get into a judgmental space of mind, even though you could say intellectually that my judgments might be correct. The judgmental frame of mind is destructive. So I'm brought back to myself. Am I being as honest and real as I can be? It's not my job to make sure you are. I don't mean you, Mystic Pete, but you know, you or you or you. I pray for everybody, and when people piss me off, I get angry and I piss, but then I remember, okay, I got to pray for that person, not necessarily for them, but because then I won't carry this poison of judgment and resentment. And I'm like everybody, you know, I get annoyed, I get, you know, certain things happen, I feel like I'm like injustice, I feel like a victim sometimes. But then I just, you know, I have to pray for everybody, and I pray for myself, and I just go deep and, wow, can I find a new melody that is going to touch a new, deeper, like, chord of my own heartstrings that I can share with everyone? And then I sing or play my guitar and explore, and then that puts me back into what's true for me, you know, what's it's like a, like the strings of a guitar, or even the strings of a banjo, you know, banjo, my first love. Can I strum those strings in the most honest way possible, and then be completely internal about that, and at the same time share it with others externally and not be distracted? And of course, I'm distracted all the time, but that's my intention. Now, I personally, you know, I don't wear Indian clothes or, you know, my home culture. Well, we have a lot of Indian art, but we're regular people, you know, and we have a lot of Brazilian art because of Nubia, but we're regular people, and I consider myself a person of the world, you know, in the world, and I feel like my goal in life isn't spiritual enlightenment. My goal is can I, on a day-to-day basis, help to make the world a better place? I don't care about ecstasy. I don't usually even experience ecstasy. You know, when I'm singing, I'm usually pretty grounded. I feel full emotions, though. And I know there's a scene that's developed around yoga and around kirtan, and certain aspects of that scene are very, very beautiful, and certain aspects of that scene are very off-putting. And there you go, and that's life. And once again, let's pray for a better world. Oh my God, let's pray for peace. I mean, it's, you know, so easy to say, let's pray for peace. You know, anybody can say it. But that doesn't make it less profound, in our deep way. And, you know, whatever that means. Like, I had a couple of funny things. Not funny, but a couple of things. My son started college in September. And I went through it when, you know, everybody talks about the empty nest kind of stuff. And he is my buddy, really deep. His whole high school, every night we'd play music together and talk about music and listen to music. And my attachment to him is huge. And I wouldn't want to lessen that attachment. That attachment I find to be precious. But when he went away for college, I was like, oh my God, what's my purpose in life? I lost my purpose. My purpose was to raise him. But then, again, it throws me back in myself. What was the deeper side of that purpose? Well, to share light, you know, to share love, to share this knowledge that music and the arts exist to share light and to share healing. And so, you know, that emptiness filled up again. And then just, I have a gig in a small place here in the Bay Area this weekend. And so earlier in the week, I was practicing. I started to practice a lot for the gig. And I realized, you know, Well, my hands, I have some arthritis issues in my hands. And so a certain dexterity on my instruments, it's a little challenged. And at first it was like, oh, God, you know, I'm a loser. I've lost it. And then I started realizing, no, I am who I am right now. And if my heart and my intention, as well as my effort, is into it, it's good enough, you know? If my fingers can't move that fast on the guitar, well, then they move a little slow, and I find the beauty in that. If my voice sounds a little bit like an older man, I find the beauty in that, you know? And it's a process, you know, of accepting our limitations. I don't know why I got to this, but it's something I've been thinking about just this week as I've been practicing more and feeling, you know, like there's a perfectionist thing. Like so I'm feeling like less than who? Less than me a year ago. But how to turn that less than into a more than, or just like, you know, this is completely who I am. And it goes back to the first thing about the cultural appropriation. Who I am is a person who has deeply, deeply been touched, healed, and lifted by practices from this ancient culture across the ocean. I still feel myself to be tribally, I guess, a Jew. And I feel that resonance also very deeply. But my spiritual practices did come from another land. And that is my culture. You know, as is Appalachian banjo playing, that's my culture too. I could be accused of cultural appropriation by playing the banjo, but I love it. And I've played it since I was 11. You know, this was the first sanctuary and musical love that came into my life. Honesty, as much as we can, which is, you know, none of us are perfect. Honesty, authenticity, compassion, caring. Take care of the next guy. If you see somebody falling, you can talk to them. They might not want to hear what you have to say, and if they don't want to hear what you have to say, c'est la vie. But,
A beautiful response, Jai. Really, this from a mature musician who's doing his best to stay grounded and honest, and a very vulnerable response. And Lord knows we wouldn't have much of music if there wasn't cultural mixing. There would be no Elvis. There would be no George Harrison or the Beatles as we know them. So, you know, it's just the way culture is. And I think you make a very important point that we can do our best to be respectful, but also learn. And yes, I love going out to Chinese food. And, you know, this is what we do. We're curious and we love the external. So, well, anyway, Jai Uttal, a very beautiful interview. And I look forward to seeing you on March 9th at the Art of Living Dome. So, what's your website?
Jaiuttal.com.
JaiUttal.com.
Yes, and Art of Living Dome is in downtown LA. So, some of you West Side folks, get in your cars. And Pete, thank you so, so much for inviting me on your show and welcoming me. It's been a delight to meet you, and I look forward to meeting you in person on March 9th. Come up and introduce yourself and just share a moment.
Thanks so much.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I have no fear. 'cause I know you're with me. Oh, yes, I know you're with me. As I walk through the ruins and the wreckage of life, I have no fear, 'cause I know you're with me. Yes, I know you're with me. The Lord is my shepherd, my sweet shepherd. He takes me by the still waters. Oh, he restores my soul. Goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, 'cause I know I dwell in the house of the Lord now and forever. The Lord is my shepherd. His rod and his staff, they comfort me as I cross the ocean of tears. Of the shadow of death, I have no fear, 'cause I know you're with me. Oh, yes, I know you're with me. As I walk through the ruins and the wreckage of life, I have no fear, 'cause I know you're with me. Yes, I know you're with me. The Lord is my shepherd, my sweet shepherd. He takes me by the still waters. Oh, restores my soul. Goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, 'cause I know I dwell in the house of the Lord now and forever. The Lord is my shepherd. Rod and his staff, they comfort me as I cross the ocean of tears.
Thank you.
We are coming to the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. At the very beginning of today's show, I played Jai's piece called Let Me Be Sky. Then after the interview, Psalm. And we just wrapped things up with Jai Utal's Primordial Swamp Beat. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out.